actually, before we actually begin the program, I want to extend our tremendous heartfelt to Dasi and Jeremy Shvabi, who opened up their hearts, their homes. I don't want to embarrass you, but I do want to say that you know, when we reached out to the Shvabis to see if they can host the parent orientation, the response was anything we can do for the yeshiva. So please share in my hearts and as well, and really thank them for the hospitality. Thanks so much. In the 1960s, it was a time when there was a lot of research being done in the area of social psychology. One of the experiments that I certainly learned about when I went to graduate school was an amazing experiment where we kind of learned what happens, what takes place in an interview session. And basically, the idea was that if somebody walked in for an interview, and the interviewer was very rigid and very tough, sometimes a little bit angry, sought out answers, looked at people straight in the eyes, and was very firm in his ways, then usually the interviewee kind of reacted in the same similar response and was a bit more frigid and anxious and did not feel comfortable at all. And yet, when the interviewer was much more relaxed and warm and open and communicative and just chilled out, the interviewee responded in kind and felt much more at ease. His chairs were here. Much more at ease at home, and was able really to better communicate themselves. The research showed that when you had that type of an atmosphere, that the interviewee actually did much better and was successful. So in that note, in that theme, I want to take this opportunity to create a certain atmosphere in the room, an atmosphere of communication, an atmosphere of openness, an atmosphere of warmth, an atmosphere where everyone can feel like we are together, and we are here to discuss and to share some of the ideologies of Yeshiva Torah Shraga. My name is Gil Al-Malay. I'm the Dean of Students at Yeshiva Torah Shraga. Beyond being in the classroom setting and with the students in the Beit Midrash, I really focus on each student, where they're heading, where they're growth, a lot of times out of the classroom, and I'm here today with Michael Olshan, who is the Manal of the Yeshiva. And B'zad Hashem, we look forward really to sharing some insights about our stuff, our philosophy, our goals throughout the year. I want to share with you a quick story that made an impression on me many, many years ago. Some of you may have heard this story, but I think it's still worthwhile to do a little bit of chazara. Story about a child who's 6, 7 years old. And every single time he walks near a particular toy store, he looks through the window and he sees a beautiful, magnificent kite full of different colors. And he looks at the kite and he says, "I so badly want this kite." Again, during the winter, he would look and he would ponder on his way to school, and then he would go continue on to school. And this would happen day after day, and the store owner would finally make an impression on him. This kid is always coming by. And before you know it, on a beautiful day like we had today, a really magnificent day, the child kind of storms into the store, takes out a bag full of coins, puts it on the table, and says to the owner, "I want to buy that cup." The owner says, "Okay, let me see what you have." And he turns over the bag, and there's a bunch of quarters and dimes and a lot of pennies and counting. And sure enough, is just the right exact change to buy this kite. And this child is feeling, wow, unbelievable. And he's handed this magnificent, beautiful package, this kite, so many colors. And he's not going to school over there. And instead, he takes the kite, and he takes the rope that he has for the kite, and he goes out and goes to the beach. And he's running out a little bit more rope. He's flying higher and higher, he's bringing up a little bit more rope. He's just walking around, and his expression, his enthusiasm, and he's letting out more and more. And before you know it, the kite is behind the clouds, and he's feeling the tug of the kite, and he's letting out more and more rope, and he's running around, and he is so happy, and he's feeling so great. And then all of a sudden, he bumps into an older man, And the older man sees, he sees a child holding on to some rope. And he looks up and he doesn't see the kite. And he says, well, what are you doing, child? Why are you holding up to that rope? He goes, don't you know? Can't you feel it? Look, it's a magnificent kite. And the man looks up and he doesn't see the kite. And he goes, there's no kite there. He goes, of course there is. Of course there's a tug, because I can feel the tug. I can feel the tug of that kite. And really, that's what we want to express to you tonight. Sometimes, B'zad Hashem, you'll be sending your son to Eretz Yisrael, to Yeshiva Torah Shraga. And he's excited, and he's feeling great, and he's been looking toward this amazing experience for a long time. And he may be running around, and he's holding something very special to him. And we may be looking outside, and we may be saying, what's going on? Tonight is our way to say to you, feel a tug. We are here. We are on the other side. We want to be the face. We want to be the people that you can connect with. You're not simply sending your son over thousands of miles away from your homes, New York and New Jersey, and thank you for everybody that drove in, and some of you a little bit shorter time, some of you a little bit longer time. But there is somebody on the other side. And what we want to do tonight is we want to create that tug. We want to be able to for you to feel, to understand who's sitting on the other side, and who you can connect with B'zrat Hashem throughout the year and years to come. By show of hands, if you know, how many C's in the word communication?
Communication.
Well done. How many M's in communication? How many N's in communication? How many O's in communication? Those of you who want to send you the message. It takes two to communicate. We are here tonight to communicate with you, but we expect to get that reciprocated back as well. We expect communication back and forth. We are looking forward to an amazing, amazing year ahead. I want to ask Revulsion to take over this part of the orientation, to speak to you a little bit about some of the educational part of the program, as well as the Mike Revulsion and the
Good evening. I also want to thank Dasi and Jeremy, good friends of the yeshiva, also old friends from well before yeshiva, and once again for opening your home to us. I just wanted, before I just get into a little bit about the educational philosophy of the yeshiva and why I think it's important that we meet tonight, I just want to share a short Dvar Torah. It also relates to this coming week's parsha. We had the advantage of, we got in this morning, so we read Emor yesterday. We're going to read it next week. But it's a question of Sphira Soma, which is a famous question, and you're probably all familiar with the question, and maybe you're familiar with the particular answer that I'm going to share with you. And that is, why is it that we count up in Sphira Soma? We're counting towards Matan Torah, and we think that we count down. We're excited about something, we're reaching something, we count down to a birthday, to an anniversary, we count down towards it, and here we're counting up. And this is a beautiful answer given by Rav Pinkus. We share this actually insight from a very short insight from Rav Aaron Cutler from Lakewood, Zatzal, who is actually asking another question on a pasuk in Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov makes this deal with Lavan to marry Rachel, and so. Lavan says, okay, you can marry her, you have to work for 7 years, then you can marry her. And the Torah says, V'hayamim hayu yamim achadim ba'avoto ota. That the days were like a few days out of his great love for her. And it's totally counterintuitive. If he's working seven years to marry Rachel, and he can't wait, that was love at first sight when he saw her. And now 7 years he has to wait, it's going to feel like eternity. And yet it says it's like just a few days out of his great love for her. So Rav Aaron Cutler says just a few words. He says, "Ki hayamim ha'ela hayu yemei binyan." He says one line to explain the whole thing. Because there were days of building, and a preparation to build the Jewish people. Klal Yisrael was going to come out of this union of Rachel and Yaakov, eventually Yaakov and Leah as well, and also Bilhah and Zilpah. From this was going to come the 12 tribes. The Jewish people are going to form from this union. So he was preparing for that union. And so the days were days of building. And so when the days of building, they actually go by very quickly. If you just, if just the time is what separates between you and that thing that you aspire to, then that takes a long time. You're looking at your watch, when is this going to be over? When is the class going to be over? And that's the experience that most of our students, most of your sons, have had probably up until now. And they're looking at the clock till, when is this class going to be over? When is this Gemara going to be over? When is this algebra? Whatever it is, they're looking at the clock. What happens in Israel, and how many of you spent a year in Israel studying? So you probably remember that was a very transformative year in your lives, and that something was different. It was a different experience that when you were studying that year in Israel, you actually weren't looking at the clock as much as you were in high school, because it was a year actually of building, of growth. And when you're involved with building and growth, time moves much faster. And it's because it's a positive experience, and that's really what happens during the year in Israel. And the guys say, here, it went by so fast, I think we just arrived here, and already we're now at the home stretch, back in Yeshiva. And it goes by very fast because the days of building. And so when we're building up towards Matan Torah, during these days between Pesach and Shavuot, we're building up towards Matan Torah. The days of building, so we count up towards it. We're not just looking to pass the time until we receive the Torah. We're trying to build ourselves up so we can be worthy of receiving the Torah, and that's how we explain why we count up and not count down. In Torah Traga, one of the things that we pride ourselves is actually to create an atmosphere of growth, and that growth has to be an inner growth. It can't be something that's forced upon them, that they are told this is what you must do, and you have to be this, and of course there is a structure, yet you need structure in order to grow, but the structure is the tafel, so the growth and the content, which is the ikar. There is the main thrust of what goes on, and that's the inside that frame, that the structure is the frame of what goes on during the year in Israel. One of the things that we actually involved with this year was actually a pilot program, which we're very excited about next year to start at the beginning of the year, is actually a curriculum that's been introduced by actually Masa. Some of you may mention the Masa because of the scholarships that they offer. So they're actually doing something new next year, or this year they started with our program and another seminary for pilot of this program, which we're actually very excited about, called My Israel Journey. And what it is to allow our students to take time out of the normal routine and to time to reflect. Sort of the way it's described is like a time to actually, to get up on the balcony and to look down at your experience in the year and to set goals right at the beginning of the year to really focus on inner growth, not just outer accomplishments of how many dafim did I learn. Hebrew did I learn? These are all important things as well. But more significantly is the inner growth that happens, that we'd like to see happen. And so we'll start with something at the beginning of the year with what is my personal mission statement? Which is something that most of our students haven't thought about. Some have. Quite surprising how many actually have thought about this. But we start at the beginning, what is your personal mission statement? Life beyond just the year in Israel, and then to lead them on this path of reflection up from the experiences they have during the year up until the end of the year, where they actually revisit that mission statement. And it's amazing to see how more sophisticated they are, how more developed in their thinking, and how their mission statement focuses less on their own personal things and about Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, state of Israel. An amazing transformation that happens, and it's all happening on their own, not because someone is dictating them what they have to think or what they have to do. As many of you put up your hands that you spent the year in Israel, and I don't have to tell you, it's probably been said to you many times that the year in Israel experience. 2015 is very different than the experience that we had when we were there 20 plus years ago. And so on the one hand, we're doing a better job. The yeshivas and seminaries are much more hands-on than they were when we went. You know, we were left to our own devices. No one really cared to make this kind of an evening with parents. You send your kids off and, you know, that was it. You hope they called once a month, maybe. and that was it. So we actually, because of, you know, the distances are so much shorter, so much smaller today. So we have to do a much better job. And I think the yeshivas in general, all the yeshivas are doing a much better job, much more hands-on, many more rabbeim on staff. On the other hand, it's much more challenging in the sense of really giving the students an experience that they've never had before. Most of the kids are coming from schools where you've sent them, which they have good rebellion, actually. They like their teachers. We didn't like our teachers. Right? It was a common thing. They hated us, we hated them. That was the way it was. It's fine. You know, you didn't expect... But today, actually, they have good people, young people they can relate to. And so, you know, when you went to Israel and sort of you get experience, like, finally, I have someone I can relate to, someone understands me. They have that already. They have it already. They have, you know, everyone's been to Israel. Not everyone. You know, now we have like one, two, three guys who it's their first time to Israel. Most of them have been for summers. And they've been all the Tehillim, they've done already. So we have to really be on top of our game. But most significantly, I don't have to really tell you, it's obvious, that the challenges that technology poses is a great one. And every yeshiva struggles with this. We all struggle with it as parents. I have my oldest is a 20-year-old, down to a 7-year-old, and a few in between. So it's something we all struggle with, and how much to let, how much when do we pull back, and they're less social than they were when we were. They're less out. They don't play ball as much as they used to. And so this is something we struggle with. I think every yeshiva struggles with, and then how much to try to control it. At the end of the day, we can't really control it. We try to educate. We try to educate, and we hope that you are partners with us in trying to educate in how best to use technology, because there's a lot of great things out there, a lot of positive things, and we try to also use it a little bit in our teaching and in our sharing on social media and so on. But it does create a great challenge in terms of getting that year experience where you're sort of isolated from all the other distractions. They have everything. They know, especially when, you know, things that happen on Shabbos here, they know they're ready before you guys know, I would hope. Because they're ready, you know, it's playing here in Israel, and they're playing in America at 12 o'clock, and they in Israel Shabbos is already out. They know every score, every game. There's nothing that they're not already aware of and in touch with, and it creates greater challenges to give them that year experience that you had, which weren't distracted. But we try to struggle with it with them, and try to educate them to what. You know, to try to give them a sense of priorities, a hierarchy of an axiology, a hierarchy of priorities that hopefully, that when they come back here, that they will be able to manage the challenges. Are all going to become greater as we go on. Every year, it's becoming more and more challenging. We hope they'll be able to live up to those challenges. Just want to share with you some of the things that we have into our schedule and other things that are irrelevant that you should be aware of. First of all, I think you all probably received a mailing that we're beginning on August 25th. There's a group flight leaving from JFK on the 24th. It's an 11:30 flight, and I apologize if that's not convenient for many of us. Many of the yeshivas and seminaries are leaving that same week, and so it's the way the sort tour company, which a lot of yeshivas use, Ariel Tours, they sort of use on a rotational basis who gets the best flights. Everyone wants the 7 p.m. flight out of JFK. So we have an 11:30 flight, and so that's on a Monday night, we start on a Tuesday. If you're not choosing to go on the group flight, don't have to. We do pick them up at the airport, we meet them there, we greet them, and we bus them to yeshiva. But if you want to use points or whatever, you don't want to use a group flight, so you're welcome to. Just let us know when we can expect him. But we do want him to be there by Tuesday evening, the 25th, so he can be part of the orientation, which is very important that they're there at the beginning of the year. In terms of the schedule, we have three starim a day in general, Gemara in the morning, but we start the day actually with a discussion, which is more a reflection, what I was describing earlier. Each student goes into a shir with his Rebbe. There's usually about 16 to 20 guys in a shir. Each shir has actually two Rebbe working with that particular group. And at the beginning of the day with a discussion, a reflection of how things are going in general, about the relationship between each other, the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And these are very, very important discussions, and which really informs the rest of their day. Everyone's in a Gemara shir. It's most of the time is spent in the Beit Midrash, learning the Parusa. Many different levels. There are five different levels of shiurim for Tanakh students. And it's not set in stone. If your son calls up, you know, the first week and says, I was placing this year, I was hoping to get into this year. It's not like you're set and stuck there. We do ask them to stick it out for at least for Elozman, which is about 2.5-3 weeks, because there is some thinking that was involved in placing in that particular share. They're all fantastic Rebbeim, but there's movement, and guys move up, guys sometimes move down, so it's not something you have to get all worked up about if it's not the particular share that you were hoping for. Everyone ends up where they want to be and where they need to be. In the afternoon, they have a choice of many, many different topics that begins the afternoon. 14, 15 Rebbeim learning in small groups, and they choose what they want to learn with who they want to learn. And then there's most of the afternoon state is actually focused to Gemara, the cute, faster pace. Again, four different levels of shiurim in the afternoon. Two Rebbeim, again, working with each group. And there you're really picking up skills of learning, skills of reading, and it's very important that they are able to, by the time they leave yeshiva, after 1 year, be able to be comfortable to read fluently, and so that Gemara is an open book for them for the rest of their lives. After that, the Kiyah Shir, there's a 6 o'clock Shir, which is again a choice of many, many different topics, and then at night as well, they have a choice of different topics, so we really, there is a Gemara focus, but we really try to cover all different kinds of areas of learning, Chumash, Halakha, Tanakh, Hashkafa, Machshava, there's a Hebrew option. So they really get so many different options that whatever they really like to learn outside of Gemara, they have that opportunity to do as well. Shabbat. The yeshiva is open from the day we arrive till the day we end, whatever it's June. Remember the last day, offhand, 12, 13, something like that. Next year it actually ends right after Shavuot. Because it's a leap year next year, so the day after Shavuot is when we end. And they never have to find a place. The yeshiva is open on Sukkot, Pesach, so if you're worried you don't have family in Israel, they have a family in Israel. They can always stay in yeshiva. Rebbeim also invite guys all the time. The guys never have to find a place to go. The yeshiva is always open, there's always food there, there's always minyanim there, there's always programming. So they don't have to get worried if they're not really sure where they're going to go during the out Shabbatot and during the Sukkot and Pesach break. I mentioned Pesach, I just want to, it's almost a losing battle, but I will mention it anyways. And that is that I strongly recommend to consider letting your son stay in Israel over Pesach. We have seen a clear difference of students who spend the entire year in Israel and those who come back for Pesach. Guys who come back, they find it very hard to get back. And next year also, it's a very short post-Pesach, about 6 weeks, as I mentioned, because it's a leap year. So if you want to perhaps save some money, I understand it's a long time to be away. It costs us more to take care of the boys and to see them, you know, over Pesach, but it's a worthwhile investment for us because we see the difference in the overall year experience and the momentum that carries over. Even though there's no shiur in particular, but they're doing good stuff. They're going to Rebbeim's homes. They're some to get jobs, cleaning or working in hotels. But staying in Israel has a certain cost. It's hard to define exactly, but there's no question that guys who stay a full year has a longer and more lasting effect than those who take a break and come back. I understand. I'm not telling you that's our policy. You know, you have to. Just going out there is something to think about. Shabbatot, we have a schedule which you should have received. Basically, one in and then two out. And in Shabbos, we'll have Rebbeim come with their families, spend Shabbat in Yeshiva. We'll have a programming theme about that particular, around that particular Shabbos that the Shiurim or speeches will focus on. And then on the out Shabbatot, there is at least one rabbi who comes to spend Shabbos in Yeshiva with his family. And there's also a program. But you don't have to stay, the guys can go out. Every other Shabbos, they can also have guests. Their friends can invite into Yeshiva. But again, Yeshiva is always open. They don't have to leave Yeshiva for Shabbat if they want to stay in. And a lot of guys do. As the year progresses, they feel less of a need to have to get out and enjoy spending time in Yeshiva. I just also want to mention the Poland trip. We run our own Poland trip. We sent you the dates for that and the schedule, which we've all received. If some of you have not received the mailing that I'm referring to, so please let me know. We'll make sure you get it this week. The Poland trip is taking place at the end of Adar, around the time we break for Pesach. It is a fantastic trip, life-altering trip. This is something that's worth to go out of Israel, come back to Israel. We actually, all the boys go, and then come back to Israel. That's an important part of the trip, is coming back to Israel before they, most of them do go back to America afterwards, so they come back to Israel. We have a whole ceremony, lack of a better word, at the hotel after we come back. And then someone will start flying out that evening to America for Pesach. But it's a very powerful trip. I want to mention that also because I encourage you, if you have the ability to join this trip, and your son will give you permission to join this trip, which many of them do. You may not want to ask him right now. Ask him, you can make mark on your calendar now, but maybe ask him, Hanukkah time, would you mind if I join? Because that around that time, they start to appreciate their parents a little more. It's a very worthwhile experience. Every year we have a handful of parents that come, and it's open also to mothers as well. So if that's something that you haven't done and you want to do and you want to do with your son, it's a fantastic experience, fantastic bonding experience. You will love your son's friends as well. Sharing that experience with them, it's a very, any father who's come, it's the greatest experience that they've had to share with their son up until that point. Hopefully they have more great experience to share, but it's a very, very powerful experience that if you have the opportunity to do so, I encourage you to look into it. One last thing is Okay, just two more things, and that is just in terms of things for kids to do, for the students to do outside of the schedule. Obviously, the main thing we're there to do is to teach Torah and to learn Torah. And that is the focus, and that we clearly try to transmit that. But there is a lot of things, other things that go on during their experience and year in Israel. The experience of Bein Hasarim, during their break time, they have a nice 2-hour break in the afternoon. And so there's a basketball court on campus. The guys play very competitive intramurals. I have to admit that last year's ball players and the year before's ball players were a lot better than what we're expecting for next year. Okay, but it still doesn't mean they can't play. They can still play. They'll have a hard time against the Shana Beck guys, but you know, they'll give it a best shot. But it's important for the guys have time to relax and to play and you know, the Ravine play as well. So it's also part of learning experience. There are computers on campus. For some reason that they don't get used as much as they did a few years ago. They have our own computers, because everyone has their own handheld thing. But they do have email access and internet access to our own yeshiva computers. There's a weight room. There is we share the campus with the Poles, with Poles, Yeshiva University of Poles, which some of you are familiar with. And the opportunities that they afford in terms of learning with our students is part of the schedule, but also outside of the schedule is interacting with them, sharing the campus with them, babysitting for their kids, and it really, one of the very nice things is seeing our students interacting with the little with mascots. It's a very, very much a part of their experience. And Tulim is very important. We have a lot of Tulim in our yeshiva. We have about 20 days of Tulim, and we, even though, like I said earlier, a lot of these Tulim, many of them have already experienced. But we have, I think a lot of the guys, we have fantastic tour guides who challenge them. And one of the first, we go to Tulim Yerushalayim, the first day they come, the second day they come, and he challenges them. Oh, you guys have been here, right? You guys, you know everything about Yerushalayim, right? Oh, you guys have been here many times. And he challenges them, and he shows that they really don't know anything about Yerushalayim. And he's great. And we have the same tour guides from beginning to end. And the guys love these guys. They're really fantastic, young guys, dynamic. And they learn a lot. And it's very important that they participate in the TLM, because it's all part of that experience. So just, now this time of year especially, it's just an amazing experience. One after another, Yom HaZikaron. And Har Herzl is a blow-away experience for our students. Yom HaTzmaut, and then Lag BaOmer, and in 2 days we've taken it to Meiron. These are just unbelievable experiences you only get in Israel that are really, amazing experiences. The last thing I just want to say is more technical. It's just in terms of dress code in yeshiva. It's pretty casual. Collared shirt, to be a three-button polo shirt. With my wife's English, but I am West American with English and take off shirt carries in England. Polo shirts, you can wear jeans or any kind of trousers. Is also fine. And footwear, pretty casual on Shabbat, white shirt, some people wear suits. It's pretty laid back, it's with Israeli style in terms of dress. I'm gonna hand it back to Rabbi Al-Malay, and afterwards we'll take questions on anything I may have said till now, and with Rabbi Al-Malay, what we don't cover.
Sure, thank you, okay. Want to focus a little bit on the theme of a Ben Torah and just the book guys. So I think that there was a lot that goes on in the campus, and then the Shurim and everything that Olson spoke about, certainly in and out of the classroom from an educational perspective. And then at the end of a very long day, the boys end up in the dormitory. So I think that we see the dormitory really as an extension of the Midrash. and our expectations of what happens in the dormitory, similar to how a person would interact if they were in the Beit Midrash, and just in the Beit Midrash, there's a certain camaraderie and office that takes place, and we certainly want that to happen in the dormitory as well. So just so everyone should know, Rebbe Fuchs, Yosef Fuchs, is the Av Bayit of our campus, him and his wife and his children. We have about 6 months with him where they're in part of the dormitory. And our hashkafa very much is that the guys finished high school. This is no longer high school, and they're now post-high school. We don't know of any college that has a curfew, and therefore we do not have a curfew either. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the give and take is there's an amazing equation, a formula, really, that we try to embark on our students. It's part of an emotional intelligence. And that is that with privileges come responsibility. Okay, with privileges come responsibilities. No better place to learn it than the year in Israel. And I think certainly our hashkafa is not an hashkafa of policing and disciplining and looking forward to push and to force, but rather, as the Russian was saying before, that there's some sort of an inner growth of coming to oneself. We have expectations. The expectation is that it's your responsibility to come to Shir, it's your responsibility to come to Minyan. We have a lot of structure, and certainly there's a lot of knowledge about the boys and what they're doing when we take attendance. So again, if the boys, if your sons are finishing at 10 o'clock, then I don't want to scare anyone here. At this point of the year, the boys are actually in the Beit Midrash beyond 10 o'clock, but don't worry, I'm not going to scare you right away. And then he comes back to the dormitory, or for whatever reason, he's meeting with somebody outside. Our expectation is that you're sleeping in the dormitory that night, that every student needs to be sleeping in the dormitory every single day of the week. In other words, with the exception of Shabbat, and then when we're off, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Motzei Shabbos, that everyone is in the dormitory. Some of us are blessed to have homes in Eretz Yisrael, and that's a big bracha. Not everyone is blessed to that. And even if you do have such a home, so we would just ask that you have a discussion with your child about the use of the home and this, this and that. Don't simply just give him the key and say, okay, go ahead, do whatever you want. Rather, that he should have in mind that not everybody has that foot, and he has to maintain the same kind of rules and policies as everybody else. Special note to mothers sitting in the room, not that it doesn't affect the fathers, but there is a cleaning crew, and the cleaning crew comes in at least once a week. I want to kind of share with you something that I've learned over the years from my students, and that is a very big difference between cleaning and tidying. So we expect the boys to tidy, which means that if they have laundry and shoes, and the mothers know exactly what I'm talking about, they should not be all over the floor. They need to tidy their stuff. However, the cleaning crew will come in and they'll do the bathrooms and the sinks and the floors. If they come into a room, and this is something that we'll teach them as well, and something that Rabbi Fuchs will speak about as well, if they're coming into the room and therefore it's all over the floor, so obviously the cleaning crew is then able to get to it. But don't worry, for everyone's sake, Baruch Hashem, that there is a cleaning crew at least once a week. The boys, when they come into the yeshiva, they basically can choose between two types of rooms. Most of the Shana Aleph boys will actually be in a four-person room, and what we've said over the years, and hopefully from the faculty as well that you have received, is that we will honor at least one of their dorming requests. If you haven't done so, please encourage your son to write. He's the one really who should be writing us back and letting us know at least one other roommate that he would like to have in the room. And part of the hashkafa, again, behind part of the philosophy behind it, is that we want to create an amazing heterogeneous group. We don't want the boys could be that they're coming in from specific schools. We don't want to create a SAR room. We don't want to create a DRS room or a TABC room and so on and so forth. We want to create a Yeshiva Torah Shag atmosphere. So therefore, I think our thinking is that if at least one good friend that your son is with, then he'll be able to meet some other people in a very intense and out of the classroom kind of experience. I want to say something which I think is known to everybody, and I say with a certain confidence and assertiveness, because I really want I want you to repeat this to the boys, and I want you to have a healthy discussion with the boys. They're coming for the year of learning. And learning takes place in the classroom, and the learning takes place outside of the classroom, in Shabbatot, and the Tehillim, and the Melaveh Matzahs, and the fish, and so on and so forth that we have during the year. For us, when the boys get off the plane, the mindset should be, I'm here to learn, and I'm here to grow. And the mindset should not be, I'm here to party, and I'm here just to take a break. You know, I think that, Baruch Hashem, we've done our diligence in terms of accepting an amazing, even though they might be the best athletes according to revulsion, we'll see what happens in a few months. But really, we've done our diligence in terms of accepting those boys that we feel have the maturity and have the potential of tremendous growth. And again, the growth doesn't just necessarily mean that I can meet an extra rash or an extra run. But in terms of our own policy, we don't want the boys to drink, we don't want the boys to smoke, we don't want the boys to be gambling. And these are all things that could potentially cause for dismissal in terms of this year. I say it in a very straightforward manner, I'm very clear with everything kind of above board. And I think it's a good place for you to if you haven't done so already, certainly to come back home and to share a lot of the things that we're speaking about tonight, of which one will be that you're coming to a serious yeshiva. And you need to know that there's no tolerance that certain types of these in the room itself, by the way, didn't mention it, but there is a refrigerator in every single room. This past year, we spent thousands of dollars in putting in air conditioners and heaters. So every single boy of Bezat Hashem will get that. That's something that we did not have in previous years. I think it makes everyone much more comfortable. Just a quick follow-up in terms of the technology. Our policy has been that we ask the boys not to bring computers. We feel that computers with the big screens can generate kind of a little bit of a greater distraction, but we understand, and I think we include most of the rabbis. And I think I can say honestly that this year, maybe with the exception of one boy, that everybody else had a smartphone. So we understand that there are smartphones. And again, it goes back to the same ideology of being a Ben Torah. If you are in the Ben Midrash and you get a call or a text or an email or something, or something very important, and you feel like you need to take it, so you shouldn't be answering it in the Ben Midrash. You can walk out. Again, there's no policing it. You walk out, you do what you need to do, and then you'll be able to walk back. So it's really a matter of kind of managing and coping. And we try to teach the boys to control their technology so the technology can work for them and not the other way around. And that really is our hope. We offer a laundry service during the year. There are different ways. We want the boys to launder their clothes. We expect them to wear clean clothes every single day. So there are laundry machines basically on every single floor of the dormitory. Most of the boys hopefully know what the laundry machine looks like, and if they haven't, they're going to get a quick tutorial at the beginning of the year. And for those boys who still may tremble upon doing the laundry, so there are various services, both dry cleaning and laundry services during the year that they can participate in. Some of the boys actually have nice family members or close friends or our parent body, and they too will do laundry, so I don't think that should be an issue. I think every year, again, I think a major difference that the Revulsion spoke about in terms of what was during our experiences 20 plus years ago and some of the experiences that the boys are having, I think every year we see more and more that parents feel very comfortable to visit Eretz Yisrael and they're part of that experience. So the first thing I just want to say, the Lev Male, really just as an open heart, an open invitation. Anyone who's coming to Eretz Yisrael, please let us know when you come. We would love to see you. We would love to share insights that you may not know about your son. Make it your business to come to the yeshiva. I think there's no greater nachas, there's no greater value when a child sees that the parent is so concerned about their growth and about their learning and about the yeshiva when they come into the yeshiva, and fathers and mothers simply have an opportunity to be sitting in shir. Fathers can be learning in the Bnei Midrash for their son for a little bit of time. I think it certainly sets a certain priority of what's important. I do want to say, however, that with everything else, that there is a challenge to it. We're asking that when you come to Eretz Yisrael, that you be aware that our policy right now is for parents to take out students for a full day and 2 evenings. That we don't want parents to come in, you know, to plan a trip to a lot for a week or more, and then to basically pull out their son for an entire week. It's very, very destructive, I think, to the boy's learning, and not just to him. Just imagine for a second that you were that young man. Throughout the day, you have commitments and responsibility to your chavrutot, to your chaburas, to your rebbeim. When you get pulled out, basically everybody's left without somebody to learn with. So an entire week, even plus, so that's not something that we're looking to do. And along with that also, there is no mitzvah. There is no halacha that basically says that when parents come in, you have to take out 10, 15, 30 boys for dinner, and certainly not during night dinner. We have a lot of during the year. We really have listened to our boys over the years, and every single Wednesday between 4:30 and 8 o'clock, that's their time off a little bit from yeshiva. If you want to use that time to take the boys out, that's great. Fridays is a great day to take the boys out on your Motzei Shabbos. And again, you don't have to. And I'll even go so far as to say that there are parents who may not necessarily can afford to take out a group of 10, 15, 20 boys. And therefore, just, you know, if you want to take a group, just a small handful, you know, of the friends, I think we're setting a tone kind of like, you don't, it's not something that everybody else has to do as well. Two major points that I want to speak about, very important points to us. Security. Security, when we were speaking about security last year, it was during a lot of tension in Eretz Yisrael, and it's something that we, Baruch Hashem, that we've had Baruch Hashem, you know, overall a very good year, but it's something that we have to keep in the back of our mind. So if you've never been to Eretz Yisrael, never been to Yeshiva Torah Shagat, it's important for you to know that the campus, for the most part, is all gated, and that there are two security personnel that work for Yeshiva University. There are cameras. There is constant security policy that is being updated. There is a security kind of crew, both made up of Rebbeinu from Yeshiva Torah Shraga and some of the magazine people from Gross and from IU. There's a lot of protocols, which I'm not even going to get into tonight. So there is a lot of thought and a lot of effort that goes into kind of making sure that everyone is safe. Students are given ID cards in the beginning of the year, and when they come into the building, they need to show their ID cards. There are different places in the yeshiva where you basically have to get in through your ID card, and it's kind of get them into the habit of something that we do with them anyway, so that not everyone can enter the building on their own, and that we keep the building as secure as possible. There will be times during the year where we are informed either from Tahal or from the police that there is some sort of a terror alert. Sometimes in Yerushalayim, the terror alerts are basically go on various levels. And sometimes we'll be informed that there's a high terror alert. An example of that would be, let's just say, if they feel like somebody from one of the villages or a terrorist is somewhere in Yerushalayim or in the area. So what we generally do is we follow the protocols. This protocol, the most of Yeshiva follow as well, and we go look for a lockdown. During that time, we send out a text to every single student, and we tell them, we inform them that they're on lockdown, and what that means is everyone kind of convenes to one particular area in the yeshiva, where we take attendance and make sure that everyone is there. If there is lockdown during a time period where students may have the opportunity to be off of campus, so we will tell them again that they have to come into campus. I think this year happened one time where lockdown was on a Wednesday time slot or around there, and we told students they had to come in. We generally, when we go on lockdown, the expectation is that they're not traveling on buses anymore. We get into a cab, we come into the yeshiva right away, and then we feel a sense of control, and we let you know through email also that everyone is accounted for. Again, not to scare you, but there is a certain reality, and just to let you know that we follow protocol. We will always err on the area of being much more cautious, and therefore we may, your students may feel that we are, what I would call either locked down or not going out as much during certain sensitive parts during the year, and that's because we prefer just to be a little more cautious and follow those protocols. So please partner with us. I just want to share with you, if I can, it's a little bit embarrassing to say, but I think it's worthwhile share, and that is, we went on lockdown this year, and it was in the beginning of the year. I don't know if you remember the beginning of the year. It was kind of like if you remember from last summer, it was a lot of things going around, and we actually had a curfew in the beginning of the year. Again, follow protocols. We felt that would be in the best interest of everyone. There were different times in the beginning of the year that it was okay to let the guys out, but for the most part, we were really on top of them. And then by the time Sukkot came along and we got the clearance from the police that it was okay, and the things were very, very safe, and not worried about it, and then we let everybody out. We get an email from a very concerned parent that his child did not go to a particular restaurant, whatever it is. So again, obviously it's not going to come from anyone from here, but just, this is where we're coming from, that we take security very seriously. Security is not only in the national sense, security can also be within in-house. About 6 years ago, we had an incident, maybe actually 7 years ago at this point, we had an incident in the dormitory on the first Friday night of Yeshiva. And we generally tell the boys that everyone is given a key to the room. We ask the boys to always lock the room. Whenever they're out of the room, to lock the room, they have keys, they can easily come in and out. But sure enough, on the first Friday night of 7 years ago, and I was there for Shabbos, and one of the boys comes in the dormitory, and he's like, my BlackBerry, those days, nobody uses BlackBerry. My BlackBerry is gone. And there was a thief that basically came in to somehow walk into the campus. Every room that was locked was a room that was never touched. It was those rooms that were opened up. So again, we get much better in there, and there are cameras where they need to be. But we ask you to ask the boys, follow security protocol, take keys, lock the rooms. It's something that's very important, and they should get on top of it. The other thing that does happen in Eretz Yisrael, as probably happens here, is that the boys get sick. And most of you probably have read information about the AIM medical insurance. I want to clarify here for a second what AIM is. AIM is not just medical insurance, which it is. AIM is also a medical practice. And the AIM clinic is filled with doctors who speak English, and your language. And years ago, when we were not using AIM, we kind of fought with the sense of bureaucracy in the Israeli system of working with insurance, and also when we finally got the medical care that we needed, then we had the battle of language. How do we get the parents involved? Because that's one of our priorities, really, to involve a partnership and communication. And there was this constant battle of the Hebrew and the translation, and to get into the English and the English doctors. And I think we kind of did it where we had. AIM provides for us during the week a doctor that comes in twice, on Sundays and on Wednesdays, or Thursdays, depending on the particular schedule, but anyways, twice during the week, and that's part of the AIM package. The other thing that that we get benefit from AIM is that the AIM doctors are very connected in both Shaarei Tzedek and Hadassah, and they know the top doctors in the specialist. We've had incidents where boys have been playing ball and they hurt themselves, and you know, sometimes you need a specialist. I think it was a year ago when one of the boys was playing football and he basically broke his ankle in two places, and we really needed a specialist to get on the phone with him within minutes. The AIM doctor was able only to call someone from Hadassah. A specialist came in to meet the boy as soon as he came into the hospital, and things will just follow up in a very beautiful way. So again, AIM is not just an insurance, it's something and that's why, you know, one of the parents had asked me, I don't know if that parent is here, you know, you need to have AIM. We we do require you to have the A medical insurance. And what I'm trying really to say here and trying to express to you is that you're getting much more than just an insurance company. You're getting someone, kind of an aggressive someone who knows the medical world. Most of them have learned outside of Eretz Yisrael. They speak your language, and it's someone that you can connect with as well. My general policy, and I basically sweep the dorms every single morning when I come in. One of the first things that I do is I go downstairs to the dorms, and I go from room to room, and if I see that someone is sick, my general policy is, first of all, if they're sick and not doing well, I kind of do a quick evaluation and send them out to the AIM clinic. But let's just say someone is not doing well, they have a stomach ache, or they have a headache, or they're just not cold, or whatever it is. My general policy is that if you're in bed, if you're really not feeling well for 2 days, I'm going to send you out to the clinic. I'm going to make sure that you go to the doctor to get checked out. Okay, so just, again, when we're dealing with boys, something that we spoke about earlier, boys are a little more chilled out about these things, but we don't want anyone to get sick and want to be able to follow up. Last thing I want to mention is the Rakaz program. The Rakaz, the word Rakaz in Hebrew is to coordinate. And in many of the seminaries, there is a Rakezet, which is a person who is hired to coordinate the life of the student. What we try to do is when the boys come to us, we basically split them up into small groups of about 8 to 10 boys, and they are assigned a rabbi, who we call internally a Rakaz. It will be this rabbi that will be in touch with you during the year. He'll introduce himself to you in the beginning of the year and kind of let you know who he is. And his job and his role is kind of to coordinate the life of your son. So he will know where he's going for Shabbos, and he'll know how he's doing during the shiurim, whether it's tikkios or nitzeder, and is an overall general feeling of how he's holding up. There will be many rabbis in your son's life that will be involved. And therefore, sometimes the call may not necessarily be from his rakaz. It could be from the morning rabbi, or it could be from me. But Baruch Hashem, just to make sure that no one falls into the cracks, that there is every single boy is assigned a rakaz. And one of the things that I generally say in November, but I think it's important to say here, is if I were to put it in an image for you, I would say to you that the rebbeim extend their hand. And there's some boys that are a little bit timid and they're not ready yet and they don't want it, and for whatever reason they're not looking for a very, very strong relationship right away. So they'll take a finger. And there are some boys who feel comfortable. They understand they're here to learn and to grow, and they'll take a hand. And some boys take the hand and the shoulder and everything else. But we really want the boys to have relationships with the rebbeim. The ideology of the rebbeim themselves. They come into work to teach Torah, but they're coming into work to teach Torah with Talmidim. And to have a Rebbe and a Talmid relationship is just not just a matter of opening up a sefer and reading and learning. It's really a matter of connecting, and that's what we're hoping for, that the boys will be able to establish that. We spoke in the beginning of tonight's session, we spoke about communication, the word communication. And I'm hoping that we've embarked hear about this concept that we are looking to communicate, and that communication is a two-way street. So we are here. This is pretty much the end of our presentation tonight. We'd like to take questions, if anybody has questions or comments before we end. That's a great time. They just leave with your
absolutely
clear. Yeah, okay, go ahead. Somewhere in the back.
The boys want to potentially learn something on their own that they're not
absolutely. As a matter of fact, many of the rebbeim have harusas with the boys during when they're not teaching, usually during the break time and afterwards and so late at night as well. So they certainly, not only do they have an openness, something that we encourage. We want the boys to be able to do that. And we have a mid-year evaluation at some point during the mid-year where we ask the boys to kind of rate their own learning and their own progress. And one of the questions that we ask is, do you have a Rebbe that you learn with outside of Seder? And if the answer to that question is no, so we really try to connect them to learn with somebody as well. So I think it's a good question. Thank you for that. We generally like our target number is between 80 and 85. With Zad Hashem, we're looking to have about 86
was this coming year. So that's going to be our target.
And
This coming year, most of the boys are coming from America, a few from Canada. In the past, we've had some boys, a few boys from Australia and from England and from some other places, but for the most part, really from North America.
The breakdown is about 50 boys from New York, New Jersey, and then 36 from outside of New York, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Some things switch every night. There's like different things that they can choose every night. Some things are like, let's say, a night trader. They're in that night trader. They choose in the beginning, out of 7 or 8 choices, they choose one, and that's what they're in for the year. But if they don't like it, whatever, they want to try something else, so there's a lot of movement and ability to change things.
I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to create a win-win situation. You know, for us, it's a win if a student is learning and they're enjoying the learning and they're learning with the Rebbe that speaks to them. And if that situation is not ideal and they want to learn somewhere else, so we are looking to create that. But as Moshe mentioned earlier before, if on the second day of yeshiva, the student feels, this year is not for me, we'll tell them, stick it out for another 2 weeks or something, just to make sure that you have a feel. But we'll know already, because we'll speak to the Rebbe and we'll know where they are.
So generally the particular student that they're in, the rabbi will help them, move their chavrusa. So in the beginning, it may start random, maybe who they're sitting next to. And then as it gets to know the boys get to know each other, so then it becomes more concretized. But if he has a particular, some guys come in, they know they want to learn with a particular boy coming in, they already have a relationship. But they may not know Shirin, but then also for us it's more important, the chavrusa time is really the crux and really good. So they know that they're a good chavrusa, so we'll put them in the same shir. It doesn't have to be only the guys in the shir. Is that a question or something? Yeah. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur there in Yeshiva, everyone's expected to be in. We have, in our yeshiva, one of the special things about Torah Chag is we actually have a big Sephardic community in our yeshiva, and some parents here as well. So Rabbi Shamula really becomes the father of the Sephardic students. He actually hosts them for Rosh Hashanah in his home in Har Nof, the community, because they daven very separately there, according to the Minhagim, and he takes care of them. But everyone else is expected to be in yeshiva, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. During the break times, there's a break from Yom Kippur, so right after Sukkot. We have a teal right after Sukkot, so there's not really so much free time. There's a few days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot where we actually do some programming, optional programming. So we rent out one day, we rent out Kraft Stadium, which is where the guys play football. We rent it out for our guys, we rent out a pool one day, we take them, to shopping for our Dalazin and live in a stadium. So we have optional programming to keep them busy, but the yeshiva is also open. Some seminaries, they close, and you have to, find your own place. We're also open on Sukkot. Everyone wants to be in Yerushalayim Sukkot. So, they are free to go and to explore, but the yeshiva is open, and meals are provided. The guys cook in the sukkah, and we do programming formally also. They invite guys, and they take them to Meir Sharm to different Shaiva. So again, these are optional programming. They can take opportunity to take advantage of them or not. It's up to them. But we do try to fill their time during that break time as well. Yeah.
You were mentioning about the curfew. I think it's really to give them the intent and not to give them the curfew, but just in terms of security, I think some point in the night to make sure that everybody's in their bed.
Right. So we actually show you from the inside. It's so secretive, actually. We have the medicine go and do a sweep in the open between 1 to 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay. I do the sweep in the morning, and there's an attendant basically who comes to battle. So we have a pretty good idea of where everyone is.
They also wake them up. Someone is not in their bed in the morning, and the dorm counselors are waking them up, and someone's not there. That is close for a while.
So the security guard is there through the night?
No, hold on, 24 hours, absolutely. And the other, basically what happens at 20 in the night, the other door is the block, we have to come in kind of like that. Yeah.
At what point in the year do you find out?
It's hard to say. Different boys at different times. I would say Hanukkah is when, you know, really people hit their stride. We have a very nice program on Hanukkah. We actually have a challenge, because we have a break during Hanukkah. It was like a long weekend, 2 days and the weekend break. And we actually challenge them. There's a lot of also, because of candle lighting, it's like 4 o'clock. So we have programming at night, but there's a lot of free time. So we actually give them the challenge to learn extra. We raise money. Whoever does 30 hours over Hanukkah of learning Gemara, we take them out to the Papagayos.
Who wants it?
Big incentive, and actually that is a big incentive. A lot of guys who Gemara was daunting for them. For a lot of guys, that is a big push for them, and that really helps them catapult them for the rest of the year. If for some reason, and any particular night, they're not going to be back in the dorm, they have a simcha, or their family's bringing a wedding, and they're not going to, so they let us know, and then, you know, we're aware of it. If they don't let us know, then we let them know.
But it's a sense that we really, it comes back to the same idea. It's responsibility, you need to be responsible. You can't make it for sheer, for particular, you can't make it for class. But be responsible enough, reach out to your rabbi. When I go, let's say, in the morning, and I see one of the students in the room, why do you say? Did you have a chance to speak to your rabbi yet? You know, that's all it is. And I think the other chance, hopefully they pick up on that, and hopefully that we'll take one more question. I think we're gonna dive in Marv over here, and I'm gonna give the credit here to Dasi, who stood up so beautifully behind me, really beautiful. And I want to really extend our tremendous hakaras to both of you for opening up your home to everybody here and to Torah Shabbat. Any last question? Okay, so if we can, the men will stay here in this room. Everybody else is invited. Then we'll join you on the other side. Thank you very much. Sure, at the margin.
Have a rabbi for your family, or a fire band.
Yeah. How are you? Baruch Adonai Mevarach Olam Ve'Elam.